You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Yeah, Jim, good to be with you on our Friday get-together.
Bob, a headline that caught my eye is the North American Energy Watchdog says AI data centers are presenting a risk or a major hazard to the power grid because they take so much power, and sometimes we barely have enough as it is.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a good one, and it's the high-tech thing, and it's now with AI, and you got to have space for it, and the further north you are, the better, because of just less energy costs and air conditioning, stuff like that. But, you know, in the 1929 bubble, the really exciting new technology was radio. Therefore, you had Radio Corporation of America, the really big favorite stock, RCA, went up to about $125 and all the way down to about $1.50. So, and then we go back to a previous bubble in 1873, and it was Western Telegraph. And they were putting up telegraph lines everywhere. And that was all very high-tech and wonderful. And then even the bubble of 1772 had tech. And well, we know that the first bubble erupted in 1720. And it was called the South Sea Bubble because the key stock had all kinds of certain rights in the South Sea somewhere. But nevertheless, it was the full bubble, and then it collapsed. And then what you get on the following these great bubbles is the spike up, the crash, the drift around, and then the real bear market comes in. And each typically followed by what people have called a Great Depression. And that can last in the order of 20 years. But listen, I got a page here from, it's called The Annals of England. So, and simple statements like 1872 prosperity, 1873 prosperity recession. So it turned in the year. Then 1874 depression, 1875 depression, 1876 depression, 1877 depression, 1878, deepening depression, and then 1879, depression, then revival. So that was a monstrous contraction following a great bubble. And separate research to this is that the senior economist in England on that great decline were perplexed by how it continued and continued, and in 1880 they came up with the term the Great Depression, meaning the one that followed 1873. And then in the history books that one bottomed out in 1895. And then you had the long recovery, long expansion in business and trade and everything, leading right up to 1929, and most people are aware of the disaster that followed 1929. So this is, you can't, Jim, you get to the point where you say there's nothing new out there. As if you've got all of the history, but for those who don't have the history, it is all new and exciting. As a matter of fact, these have been, in real time, called new eras. That's not errors, it's E-R-A-S. So we're in a new era, and that gives away, the new gives it away. They've happened before. But nonetheless, the new era is showing a great deal of excitement about the financial markets, and the general public is in. They don't get in at the major bottoms. So these are, we are in a great bubble, and it's uncertain when this actually peaks. Seasonality is good through mid-year, and then historically you've got the New York stock market can do a great bubble peak in September. So it's going to be very interesting this summer and through until September. I know I'm going to be fascinated by it.
Is that when you expect this current bubble of all bubbles to perhaps froth out and burst?
Yeah. Also, some people have called it the everything bubble, or maybe that was me. I don't know. Anyways.
It's you.
The everything bubble. Everything is in play. And, so we just watch this. Describe what the condition is and watch it evolves through the summer and wonder about the exit. But we're not exiting yet.
Bob, are you surprised that gold hasn't gone on another charge with so much uncertainty in the world right now?
Oh, yeah, but the gold and silver had their play and became very overbought, so it needs a rest. But also with these great bubbles, the only way to keep track of what gold is doing is to deflate it. That can be by the Consumer Price Index, or I deflate it by the CRB Commodities Index, following a great financial bubble, gold's real price goes up, and that's the key thing. And what it seems to be is that Mother Nature raises the real price. And where I do it relative to commodities is that commodities is a practical way of keeping track of mining costs. And I've talked about this with very high up people in gold mining companies. And they agree. There is also, we've got the gold divided by commodities, and as I say, commodities are a proxy for costs. Now, the whole of the precious metal world dwells on the price in U.S. dollars. Now, what does that tell you? Nothing. So, if you have costs going up, like crude oil soaring, and mining costs are about 60% of operations, if your costs are going up in gold faster than the price of gold, you're losing money while mining it. But everybody gets excited about the dollar price of gold. But we don't get caught up in that sort of excitement. We just look at the real price as compared to mining costs, which we consider the CRB commodity index to be good. And it got overbought really quite early in the year and needed a correction. So it's correcting and pausing and whatever you want to call it. And what is going to be interesting is when the next advance comes in. And the reason why it seems to work, I've thought about why the real price goes up, and the miners make more money with the real price going up. So it's Mother Nature's way of increasing gold production. And that gets into the banking system, despite what Keynesian economists say, or they detest gold. But anyways, the gold gets into the system, and it begins to reliquify things at the time when a whole bunch of wild, scary paper, bonds and all, are just illiquid and going to zero. Like junk bonds are going to, many of them will just default and disappear.
Bob, is FOMO, fear of missing out, driving the market right now?
Yeah. Yeah, and I say, well, we've got a chart showing the proportion of retail trade in the stock markets, and it's up there. So, unfortunately, that is history where the retail account comes in at the highs and is not there. As a matter of fact, it's usually bailing out at the lows. So it's difficult, but it's true. So, yeah.
Is cost averaging the most efficient way to take advantage of the stock market?
No, there's a whole contingent out there, Jim, that are equity oriented. They cannot exit stocks mentally. So what they do is if they see a difficult market coming, guess what? They buy what they call as defensive stocks. And that's saying, hey, we know the market's going to go down. We can't get out of equities, so we're going to own equities that'll go down slower. And that's what it's about. And no point being in a bear market for stocks. And what we like to look, oh, here's the irony, is that in a bear market, post-bubble bear market and recession, market is there, but you have all of these people who are stuck in the markets, and eventually they bail towards the end. So, great financial bubbles are interesting. Even ordinary cyclical bear and bull markets are interesting, and there's no question that we are in the greatest bubble in history.
We'll take a look at some of the headlines that caught Bob's eye right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Bob, some of the headlines that caught your eye and you sent to me today from Zero Hedge. Goldman warns crash risk spiking as market breadth plummets to dot-com bubble lows.
Yeah, in the vibrant part of a bull market, Jim, more and more individual stock issues rise. So that the whole market is going up. And then when you reach a climax and then it begins to head down, well, in this case, the number of stocks that were going up, and that's called market breadth, was there, and now it is not there. When they say market breadth plummets, that is a bad sign.
Ford sales post sharp 14.4% decline in April as EV and hybrid sales plunge.
Oh, yeah. Electric vehicles. Ugh, what a promotion that was. Everybody got on board. Governments got on board. You know, in Canada, you know, by 2030, there's supposed to be a certain percentage, 30 or 40% of new car sales must be electric vehicles. Now, what they haven't understood or even stopped to think about, where is the electricity going to come for an extraordinary increase in demand? Never think about that. In a study I saw a while ago, it would take 8 or 9 modular nuclear plants to look after the increase in demand for electricity. Now, can you imagine the bill for building 8 or 9 modular nuclear plants? These people in governments in a passion never ever really look at things seriously. It's we've got to do it now.
Also, we have Ottawa giving Ford, it's a grant, of over $400 million to produce pickup trucks in Ontario. That works out to a subsidy of over $300,000 per employed worker.
I know.
Is that good economics?
Yeah, I was just yesterday talked to an acquaintance who is a automotive engineer. I consider him kind of a genius in that field, and he lives in Oshawa, and he consults to all the big, you know, Ford, General Motors, Chrysler, Stellantis, or whatever they call it, on improving their assembly lines and all that sort of stuff. So he's really well informed, and he says that in Canada, the business is virtually gone. They're laying off huge numbers of people and really shutting down plants. And yes, the tariffs, Trump's tariffs have something to do with it, but and actually, a peak in car sales in the United States could be occurring as well. We'll watch for it.
Now, the Chinese with their EVs, those EVs, the reason they're affordable in China is that they're about 99% built by robots, so they don't have a labor cost built in.
Mm. Well, any automobile plant can go to modern techniques. So
you're not, if you're using people to build cars, you're not keeping up with modern technology,
and you're only protected. A monopoly on that type of construction. Anybody can do it. So,
yeah.
And this is what happens when you go into a period of price weakness. Business and industry gets very efficient. There are articles published on it about how in a post-bubble contraction, the weak prices trends force industry to become very, very efficient. And Mensch, M-E-N-S-C-H or something like that, was a guy who did a major study on that. So, yeah.
From Sprott Webcast, a rare opportunity, critical minerals in an era of energy security and defense.
Yeah, that was a major publication by Sprott on all of the shortages of items, key items out there. I take it as pretty close to the top of the market. And then the other one from What's Up With That is apparently, quote, I'll start from the beginning, quote, apparently getting old causes climate change. And I had to grab that headline. I read about it, and aging people, yeah, have more demands on this and stuff like that. So you and I talking right now, Jim, as we age, we're contributing to the climate problems out there.
But, Bob, I work from home. I don't commute every day to the office to go out and gather news and so on. My car gets used once a week, usually for medical appointments. So I don't see how I'm contributing to climate change if it's vehicles that do it.
No, you're breathing out CO2.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So, Bob, you and I will have to hold our breath.
Well, Jim, I'm very sincere about this. And because my breathing out of CO2 is so bad, I take every other breath.
Well, now I know why my spider plants in my office are doing so well.
Because you're breathing out. I think you breathe out at 5% what they're worried about is 0.004%. I mean, 425 parts per million is really low, and you got a chart. You can get a chart nowadays with climate or temperature and going back for hundreds of millions of years, and also they've been able to assemble a record of atmospheric concentrations of CO2. And there were times past when the atmospheric concentration of CO2 was 7,000 parts per million. And you'd have this chart, and the change in the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere follows the changes in climate from warming trends to ice ages by 500 or 600 years. So this notion that CO2 concentrations are dangerously high at 425, no, geologically speaking, this is unusually low. And what's more, Jim, at 150 parts per million CO2, life on the planet shuts down, and that would be a very dismal prospect.
We'll be there to report on it.
Oh, hey, that's a good attitude, Jim.
Bob, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Yeah, Jim, good to be with you, and I'm looking forward to getting together next week.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He was speaking to us from Vancouver. If you have any questions for Bob, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. We'll ask that question for you. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.